Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Big Jim is wearing his heels.
I did 13 years professional, which I was incredibly proud of. And like, when I finished, I was happy to be finished. And I said, oh, wouldn't mind giving it a go. The next day, he talked to his boss. I got a phone call, and I was about 3 days later, I was up in a golf club where this guy was a member practicing my whistle tone. So, fucking straight into it. I found out that I wouldn't be going as a referee before the Six Nations. Mm. So I got down to the last 17. Two of us were cut before the Six Nations. I was really, like, I was disappointed. Mm. Like, very proud of the way I conducted myself up to that point, because I think I did enough to get selected, but I fell out on the subjectiveness of, they give themselves about 30% subjective. And I get that, because they're selectors, they want to bring the people they trust. And in my case, unfortunately, I probably didn't have enough games under my belt.
On this episode, I'm joined by a former teammate of mine, an Irish teammate, who's now a referee. It's the wonderful Frank Murphy.
We all met up yesterday, and we kind of just to get alignment going into the World Cup and going into this kind of post-Six Nations period where they have the warm-up games, rugby championship. So it's pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What does alignment mean?
Alignment means we show the coaches some areas of the game that we want to referee and how we want to referee it, and they respond to that, and we kind of try and meet in a middle ground somewhere, you know, which can be a bit worrying when you're going with the coaches, because, you know, you might have some personalities, but actually it worked out really well.
How are they in that? And I'm asking that because it's that off the back of the Six Nations, and there's, yeah, a load of stuff. Are they hanging because they've let their hair down to have a few beers, or is it all very kind of formal?
No, it actually was very informal. There was none of them hanging.
Polo shirts the lot? Was it a formal gig?
Polo shirts required. I hid mine under my jumper, but yeah, polo shirts required. I was a bit apprehensive because I'm not on the scene that long. But we have done a few Zoom ones, and they're just weird because they're very hard to interact over Zoom. But so you don't know what the kind of room's going to be like. But we were splitting tables, and it was really good, really interactive, the way rugby should be. You know, open conversations, and it worked really well.
My new company, World Rugby, eh?
Yeah, you were mentioned.
What was that?
In dispatches. I don't know who mentioned you, but you were, just that you were working with World Rugby.
I wonder.
It's a good thing, I mean.
Yeah, that is a good thing. I wonder how I'm received in that world, because it's a big leap for me, but probably more so for them and the association, because World Rugby is so big, the fact that the referees come under that umbrella. Obviously, the World Cup's come under the umbrella. It's a very corporate environment, and as you know, Frank, we've known each other a long time. I'm not that corporate.
Yeah, I do know that. Yeah. But I suppose, what are they employing you for?
Creative director.
There you go.
I've genuinely got a passion to try and bring the game into the new age. Sounds like it is a really old school game. It isn't, but from a media entertainment participation and engagement online, and I've driven a Land Rover, they're brilliant cars. We want to bring it into the, like, not the Discovery, we want to bring it into the Defender.
Okay.
A bit more edgy, yeah, you know? And
I'll take your word for it. But I think that's smart by them. I think it's smart by World Rugby.
Thank you, Frank.
It shows foresight. And it's not a world that I know much about, because we'll probably get into it later. I tend to hide away from social media. But fairness to them, they know that's important in the game at the moment, and to grow the game. You can see that across other sports. So good luck with it.
Well, that's the thing. I think they're seeing what other sports are doing, and something needs to change. There needs to be a seismic shift in the media, entertainment, and also the collaboration. Like, as in, we are so uncollaborative when it comes to sharing content, having discussions, having fun. it is quite closed off. And that's, Frank, that's why you're here, mate. You're here for all them reasons today. And
well, that's why I'm nervous too here.
I'm not going to open you. I'm not going to ask you about Yakko Yiker. I'm not going to ask you about Yakko Piper. We're not allowed to call him Piper either. It's Pepper? Yakko Piper?
You're doing fine.
Am I? That's I'll stick to Yakko Piper. Look, this isn't about that. This is more just going through the archives, because people will think, what's Jim doing in the studio with Frank Murphy's 10 years older than Jim, as in... I Wikipedia. You're a year younger than me.
Correct. If Wikipedia is correct.
Wow. It says that Andy Goo's 75 kg, so you could
say... Andy Goo taught me a lot of lessons about that type of thing and how to prolong your career, so we'll leave it at that.
But we did play at Leicester together back
correct.
In the day.
And that's another reason I'm a bit worried about this.
We're not bringing any of that up. I have parked that firmly in the closet.
Great times, though, Jim. Great times.
Frankie, amazing times. Mm. You think about the people that were there and the characters... at Leicester, and what's kind of come out of that. And I say that time we had the English legends of 2003, your John O's, Ben Kay, Neil Back, Richard Cockerell, Graham Rowntree, Austin Healey, if you can call him a legend. He's a nice
there
lad.
You go, yeah.
I like him. But,
well, you said it, but yeah.
But also an influence of Irishmen, not just any Irishman. Like, you lads were brilliant. Yourself, Leo Cullen, Shane Jennings, Johnny Murphy, and then we had Castro living down the road as well. Ian Humphreys. David Humphreys' brother.
I think we had eight of us. There's a great picture of us actually all together, the eight Irish lads. So it helped us settle into that scene. But it was an easy scene to settle into. It was such a good move for my career. I was Munster at the time. Munster... You know, you remember, it was just kind of the start of professional era. Like, you know, we were getting things going. That was 2006 when I joined Leicester. So we were about, you know, 8 or 9 years into it. But I grew up in a junior rugby club, which is, you know, not underage rugby club, but, you know, it's below senior in Ireland. And it was just, I love being part of that club. I still love being part of that club, Crosshaven Rugby Club. I love walking into place. Munster wasn't like that for me. Munster was more of a representative thing. It was, you did the match and you kind of all... departed and went your separate ways. You're really proud of what you did, but there was no club feel. And when I went to Leicester, it was like playing with Crosshaven. The way the lads looked after me, when my family came over, the way they looked after my old man when he was there, like
it was fun.
Yeah, it was good fun.
It really good was. Fun. And we lived on a closed off estate. Do you remember Freeman's Meadow?
Correct.
Where we all bought. Did you buy one there?
No, I was.
Oh, lucky you. Yeah. So myself, Johnny Murphy and Ian Humphreys, we bought these lavish townhouses, which were going to be the next big thing.
I remember, yeah. I think you were pushing it.
Oh, gosh. I'll tell you now, I've been stitched with it. But I had a footballer who played for Australia.
Yes, I remember him.
Who lived next, wild, loose, who lived next door to me. And it was one of these new builds where the walls are so, like, it's like plasterboard, right? So you could literally put your hand through the wall. Castro did put his hand through a few of the walls. But I remember... he left and was like, I'm not paying for it anymore, because he paid 300 grand for it and it was worth about 100 grand. It was an absolute nightmare. That was the worst investment I have ever made. But some great memories have opened my door. Were you opposite me?
I was in, I think Humps was opposite. I was up in an apartment somewhere, kind of. I could get away when I needed to. Swift exits.
I remember just opening the door, just looking through. They were brilliant times at Leicester. They really were. I think the foundations, like anyone who you speak to, like Leo, right, Leo is as straight as they come, but we know he's not. Like, he might be straight now, but I know Leo as Leo that was at Leicester having a few beers, and them relationships that are so deep rooted and authentic.
Yeah,
that's why they were so special.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And Leo's a funny one for me. I get to see him when I referee his team, but you know, he's just a great guy. He's just, you know, he's down the line. He's honest, and I really enjoy working with him. And we probably have that relationship from back then. But like the way the game is now, Jim, and you probably find it when you're doing all this work, rugby's so small, and there's something about that club in particular. There's so many people I know from that in every place I go, whether it's you or Leo or Andy Goode you're working with. You know, it's like it's a small world, and it's really stuck to me. Those relationships we've had in Leicester. So I kind of find myself very lucky that we had that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then off the back of that, when you look into the future, I don't think you probably saw me sat in here doing a podcast in the media. I can tell by the wry smile. I didn't see you being a referee. It's amazing how you go from, what age were you there? 23?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
What are you now, 48? What
a year younger than you.
A year younger, yeah. Okay.
So on Wikipedia.
36. Yeah. Being a referee. So how does one come to get into that role? And again, just there seems to be this trend as well with scrum halves that I've picked up.
Yeah, there is. And I don't know where that's come from, but possibly we're best suited to rule. But that's not why I was approached. I finished up in Connacht. I did 13 years professional, which I was incredibly proud of. And like when I finished, I was happy to be finished. You know, that type of way. Mm-hmm. Like there was no, there was options to go other places. I just didn't want to. I was like, I'm done. I had a really bad knee injury the year previous that I came back. So I had a year out, really wanted to get back from that. Did another year. And I just, you know, there's like guys like Kieran Marmion now in Connacht just passing me out. And I was like, oh, I don't have the fight in me anymore. You know, that type of way. I didn't want to hold a tackle bag. I didn't want to be hit on the ground. So I was ready to stop playing rugby. So that was really good. And then in fairness to my wife, she said to me, Frank, you know, you've done it for 13 years. Don't stress yourself out. Just take 6 months off. We moved back to Cork where we're from. And that was really good advice from her. And I kind of just got to sit back and reflect. And I think about 5 months after I finished playing, I was at a wedding and a friend of mine I played with years and years ago in a club called, a big club in Ireland called Corcon, really well-known club. A lot of history to it, but I played with him there for a year and he had started refereeing and I said, oh, wouldn't mind giving it a go. You know, the next day he had talked to his boss. I got a phone call and I was about 3 days later was up in a golf club where this guy was a member practicing my whistle tone. So fucking straight into it.
Really?
Which was bizarre for me.
Hang on, you're practicing your what?
Whistle tone.
Hit me with what that means.
This is what I was like when they said to me, oh, Frank, you need a referee, but we got to teach you how to blow the whistle. I said, are you having a laugh? Teach me how to blow the whistle. But you have to learn all these little things and parts of the game.
Well, it's like, the big,
you
know, thing. The whistle is the thing. It's the tool.
For credibility of decision, but it was just bizarre having to do it. And that's how I started.
Go on then. No, hang on. A bit more about the whistle. Anyone can whistle. It's not as simple. Is there an art to it? What does it mean specifically? I mean, for the people out there that are desperate to be referees.
Yeah, imagine. I'm telling you now, Jim, pick up a whistle. Some people can't blow it that hard.
I reckon I could blow a whistle. We'll see. It's not like a bagpipe, is it?
I'm really disappointed we don't have one.
Yeah, I could try one. I've had a whistle blown in the ear a few times.
Yeah,
I know that.
It's a thing. It's a thing like signalling. So the other thing that happens when you start refereeing is you go out and you do your games, you think you're great, and then you watch your first video back and you see yourself giving a holding on signal and you're like, oh my God, what am I doing? So it's just a thing, like it's a skill that you have to practice.
I look at refereeing, I think, and again, having you on, but also when I had Luke Pearce on as well, was watching the positioning that you had to be in. Mm. And maybe that is why, as a scrum half, you're probably more suited because all your life as a scrum half, you're 100%. In that position, yeah?
Yeah, 100%. That's the biggest advantage I found when I started is that it was very similar to the lines I would have taken as a nine. So I'm just running to rock. And even now, I'd be kind of known within our group in Ireland as being very close to the rock. Not always a good thing, but I can get there and get out the way. It depends on what style of refereeing you have, but it's good for me. But certainly that comes from my history of playing number nine. So yeah, probably suits the other guys as well.
Yeah, so you get picked up. You do your whistle. What do you call it again? Whistle tone?
Let's move on from that.
Yeah, we'll move on from that. So you learn to blow the whistle.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the path, when I looked at you and Carl Dixon as well, the acceleration in that space, was there an appetite from, is it World Rugby, the body, or who's put you in that position to put you on that fast track? Because it is a fast track.
Well, in my case, I can't speak. Carl was a bit different the way they handled him, but in my case, they definitely fast-tracked me, no doubt about it. But you had to meet the expectations, you know, you had parameters to meet. And kind of getting back to my roots, I loved that progression. Because what happened is I'd stopped playing, like I said, I'd taken about 6 months out, and I started missing the game a bit, and I didn't know how I was going to get back into it. And what happens when you start refereeing Ireland is you start at the bottom. So like back doing junior clubs, which is where, you know, I was brought up doing. So I ended up back in Cork, starting my refereeing career the exact same way I started my playing career, you know, going to those clubs and visiting the same places, moving up to the school system, which is, you probably know from talking to different guys, but the school system is huge in Ireland, and it's why we're probably so successful at the moment. But then refereeing the school system onto All-Ireland League, exact same path, and then you're kind of entering into, you know, underage internationals and professional game. There was a real nostalgia to it, and I really enjoyed it, so it was a good time.
Yeah, I mean, again, just to add on to that, And I know you were close to playing for Ireland. You played a few A games, played in some big games. What's the biggest game that you referee, just to give listeners a context of where you go from grassroots, schools, and then Frank Murphy ends up near the top of the tree? I've seen you referee in some big ones. What's your biggest one?
Well, the biggest one I've done recently was Scotland, New Zealand. So I'm not on the test scene in terms of refereeing all that long, but I've done two tests. COVID really kind of stymied like where I was in terms of progression, but I've done two tests since the summer. So certainly the Scotland, New Zealand game was the biggest international.
I saw you in the tunnel, didn't I? I saw you that day. Yeah, there was obviously a lot going on. You were.
It was a bit. It was a big game. You know, Daddy was there for the last game and stuff. As it turned out, and it was really emotional. It was one I'll never forget.
That game, the emotion in the stadium was like something I have never experienced, because that game, Doddy was going to bring the ball out, and as we know, he was in a wheelchair and he was deep into his MND, a lot deeper than any of us thought. And then there was a big delay, wasn't there? Because we were like, well, what's going on? Doddy's not bringing the ball out. And then he brought the ball out. Yeah. And the emotion, you went over, didn't you, with the...
Well, the two captains. Over, and both players from both sides went over. So I kind of made my way over as well. But you could just see on everybody's faces the emotion. It was incredible. It really was. I'll never forget that. But that's the thing about refereeing, it gives you such opportunities to be in these places, probably like your own job, that I didn't expect to be in after I finished playing. Another one was, I didn't referee the game, I touch judge it, but after Axel Foley passed away, which was so sad for all of us in Munster and in Ireland, New Zealand Maoris came over to play Munster. And I touch judge that game. It was horrendous conditions. But again, it was a it was that kind of, you know, the hair standing up on your arms kind of feeling when, you know, they presented the jersey, the whole crowd was standing up, like it was torrential rain, but the noise, it was a really nice occasion to be part of, to commemorate such a great guy, you know. So it gives you those opportunities, like I said, it's special.
It is. We're at this weird age, aren't we, Frank? Because we are, let's just put it out there. You're nearly 40. I've just turned 40. We've lost some great men along the way. And I don't know whether it's the moment in time. It's just life, isn't it? When you're a young lad, you're going through, there's not a lot happening. There's obviously tragedy within that. But, you know, like, I just think about the people that we've lost, like Tom Tierney the other week, Sarah Rambini that we played with, Stephen Booth. They're three Leicester lads that we've played with.
Yeah. It's just sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard to take in. And like you said, they're, you know, just guys in their prime as well, you know, great guys. And you'll always remember them. The moments we had with them, and I was back like when we were, you know, all lads.
Loose. And fun and smiling.
So that's, you know, that makes it a bit more sadder when you start thinking about it.
Yeah. And the smiling element to it, I'm very conscious now in this role that I want to enjoy it, right? I don't want to be going out getting absolutely blitzed and it becoming a burden. This is brilliant. The fact that we're chatting, I mean, I've not spoken to you properly in ages and now we're in the studio talking, but you're also... seemed like you really enjoy it. You've always got a smile on your face. Like, it seems like you are, like you're a smiler anyway. And some people might hate that because you're a referee. Like, what's he laughing at? But you seem very happy.
I enjoy what I do. Yeah. I enjoy what I do. You know, I'm in a weird situation. I'm an ex-player. And there's only a handful of us who can kind of really have a handle on this. But like for Carl or Nick Berry or some of the other guys, Johnny Lacey previously, like I've had to referee my ex-teams. And some people don't like that. Some people do like that. But I think one of the hardest things I had to do to start my career was referee Connacht, who I played 100 times for. And I was really nervous about that game. And I was just starting out. And I remember talking to my team during the week and saying, right, we get to the sports ground. We're tuned in. We're going to be uber professional. This is what's going to happen. And went in, knocked on the Connacht door, do the front rows chats, looking for the front rows. And Before any of them assembled, like John Muldoon straight over, the biggest hug I've ever got. I'm like, the lads are just laughing. I was like, you know what? You just have to be yourself. Mm. You've no choice, because it's the way rugby is. You know, it's all about relationships, and the more yourself. And I think I've heard you speak about this in your own role. I think the more natural you are, the better you do your job.
Yeah, you've got to be you, haven't you? And I suppose that must have been really difficult. And that was something that I was going to ask. Like, you go into a changing room and people know the Frank that I know.
Yeah.
And you're in this position of... extreme powers sounds like I'm over-egging it, but you are the man in the middle, the man with the whistle. You know how to blow it, and you're there having to make big decisions against, you know, lads that you like and some that you might not like as well. Yeah. And ah, well, how did you deal with how did you deal with that?
Once you get on the pitch, genuinely, it's not a factor because you're in flow, you're in, kind of in the zone. You know,
it's like playing against your mates. So I suppose you know if you play against your mates when
you don't think about it. Do you?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, unless and it's a bit different, you might have opportunities. You might have opportunities as a referee, you know, in downtime or whatever. But genuinely, it's not a factor.
Mm.
It really isn't. I suppose the other hard thing is when I started out, not so much anymore, but when you go and do that front row chat, it's like if you know one of the lads, and it doesn't happen anymore to me, but when I first started, I remember doing an All-Ireland League game and an ex-Connacht player was the hooker of that team. And he, as soon as I walked in, he just started laughing. I just said, I can't, because he knew I'd be bluffing, particularly at that stage of my career.
Mm.
A bit more knowledge about me in terms of that factor of the game now. But at that time, he knew, I knew, I just walked out. I said, good luck, lads. Have a good one. But that's all you can do.
It's like the imposter syndrome, though. I suppose there's an element of that.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
and because you've been fast-tracked into that. And there's a I think there's a romance around that. Like, it's nice. It's nice to have that. But I suppose, like you said, going back, if it's a completely different team and no one knows you, you're the referee. But until these lads retire... But then they become coaches like Leo or John Muldoon.
Lots of them, yeah. I'd say there's not a team in our league anyway that were probably have built some relationships outside of my playing days, but there's always someone involved with the club that I would have played with.
Mm.
So that's the way I look at it. You're going to have relationships with every club. So I think that's a good thing.
When you chat to the front rows,
yeah.
Is there an element of, like, you know, and again, this might be harsh, but... You're talking to them about keeping the scrums up and all these different things. Like, there must be, and you probably won't answer this. Like, no one's got no idea. Once you get out there, you've got no idea what's going on. No one's making the right decisions half the time. Is that the hardest part of the game as a referee? You might be opening yourself up here, but I think it is an obvious
The scrum
one.
Are speaking to them pre-match.
Both, probably. It's the same, is it not?
Again, you know, with a bit of experience, when I go into dressing room now, I don't speak to them about keeping the scrum up or driving straight or I want your bind here or there because, you know, I've never been in a scrum. I don't know what it feels like. That's up to them. But what I do say to them is, this is the way I'm going to call the engagement. I might be longer here than other referees. I need you to do this for me at this particular moment. And I try to control what I can control, and I can control that because that's what I'll control on the pitch. When you get out there, I think the biggest thing is, we're like kind of getting into technical rugby stuff now, but if we can get that set up right that I'm trying to control, then after that, you just have to pick the most obvious picture. It's not easy, like you said, because there's two sides of a scrum. Nobody wants to see multiple resets, but, you know, I think the good referees are decisive and make decisions and just move on with it.
Yeah, I think the ones who make the quick decisions and there's an understanding, again... And we were talking in the green room, sounds so posh. I've got such an easy job. I'm watching it on TV, rewind, play. You get multiple camera angles. It's like, right, that's the wrong decision. That's the wrong decision. A lot of decisions that are made at the scrum are wrong, and it's the impossible task because you, with players that are trying to manipulate the situation, the soft hit, an over hit, and everything else that goes with it, the old school dark arts of it, it must be a really difficult part of the game, and one that I'm talking about creatively about how we can potentially change that. You know, would it be worth, you know, like the NFL or like rugby league have done before, having two referees in there? I don't know, but it is the big part of the game that feels like there needs to be not a seismic shift. I've used that term already on this podcast, but it feels like the one frustration in terms of a historic part of the game, scrum, line out, breakdowns, the laws, the identity of the game, yet it's the most difficult one to consume as a fan for casual fans, but also because a lot of the time the decisions, it's a 50-50.
50-50. And the problem is when those 50-50s are big decisions which result in 3 points or a kick to corner. But my opinion, I think the scrum is moving towards a really good place. I think in World Rugby you've got Micron liaising with all the World Rugby scrum coaches. I think that's really helped us.
Who's that, sorry?
Mike Cran, who had been ex-New Zealand scrum coach. I think that's really helped us. I think he does a really good job with them. There's a lot of buy-in from the coaches now. There's a lot more discussion. And I think we've seen a lot more positive action. I think in the England, in the final game of the Six Nations, Ireland-England, I thought the scrums were really good. And what I liked about it as well is Jaco, who's the referee, had a few problems in the first few scrums. kind of laid down the law, and then we got some really good pushing contests, which was great to see.
So yeah,
I really enjoyed that, actually.
No, I agree. I did think the scrums in that game did turn out to be a positive. There was a headline thing out there. I'm not expecting you to comment on that. I don't think it's fair.
I've opened myself up here.
I know. You segue. It was a lovely, lovely segue, yeah. Frank. But these are the topical things around some of the big decisions. Mm. Now, as a young referee in the middle of that, when these big things happen and the crowd get involved, and if we go big, a big Six Nations game, someone like Yakko in that, it's a Grand Slam decider for Ireland. It's Johnny Sexton's final game in the Six Nations. Like, there's a load of emotion around that game. Does that matter? Does he feel that? Do you feel that as players? And I know the emotion of everyone coming over, but as referees, do you feel that? How difficult is it to take yourself out of that situation? And I suppose this is, if you answer this one first, because you mentioned it there, like, you're having a team talk collectively as a group. Like, it's a test match for you as well.
Yes.
You know, so it's not, you go out on the piss the night before, have a skinful, you're absolutely loving life, watching the haka unfold, watching the anthems, Ireland, England unfold, like, as in, it is business. So you are in razor sharp, you're deep within the emotion. You must feel that in the middle, right?
Yeah, of course you do.
Mm.
Once you see that on screen, you know this is a big moment. But that's kind of our skill set. That's what we train for, and that's why the top referees in that position. You know, does that make it easier? Of course it does, because we train for it, and we prepare our team for these situations. But there's just some incidents at the game at the moment that are really hard to make judgments on because of where the game is, and, you know, we want to protect player safety. And I think if we keep that as our foundation, I think that's the most important thing.
That's the hard thing, right? And again, going back to how I tweeted about it after, and loads of people jump on it, good and bad, spoke about it on the Rugby Pod with Goody. And again, not the naivety, but I'd say the way that I am, I've gone all in. Definitely not a red card, ridiculous decision. I still feel that, but it's understanding that your responsibility as referees, first and foremost, is safety.
Of course.
And the pressure and the burden that you must feel around that, if something like that happens, I suppose that's why it is easier to go red than to not, you know, if a player's lying down there and Hugo Keenan looked like he was concussed. There's a part of me now, in hindsight, which is a great thing, where I'm like, I can see why he has red card, even though I don't think it is. I can understand why, with the pressure of that player safety.
Yeah, I suppose, getting to your point, do we feel that pressure? Like, we've come a long way since kind of the start of COVID or the last World Cup, where the way we deal with those situations is different now. We have a really good head contact process, which we follow, which I think, and some people might disagree, but I think we get really consistent decisions out of it. The problem is when you get grey areas that are difficult, and you're just going to get them in the game. You're going to get one every few games where people are going to be split down the middle.
Are you allowed to say what you thought or not? Is that too much?
No, I'm not going to say it. What I thought, but you know that, because there's other factors involved that has to go to judicial, and they have to make a judgment on that. So it would be wrong for me to comment. But all I'd say is that, you know, those decisions are difficult to make. They're just not easy.
No, I can see. I think refereeing a rugby match, the way things are now, is one of the hardest jobs in rugby at that level, because of everything that comes with that. I don't mean, you know, the whistling and the jeering and stuff like that. That's drama. I like a little bit of that. But even me putting a tweet out of how divisive and how aggressive people come back, I can't imagine what it's like to be a referee. I think you are on social media, aren't you? You're closed off, potentially. You're not Frank. You're Steve.
No, I'm not. I'm Frank. But I'm not. Like, I'm not on Twitter.
That's the horrible one. That's the poison.
I just don't get it. Some of the lads are. Some of the lads aren't. For me, it's just not a thing. Like, I just can't go on. I've no business to be on there, because all you're going to see, like, what do I want to see when I go under? Do I want to see Frank Murphy made a good decision? I'm not going to see that.
You're not going to see that ever.
Do you know what I mean?
It might get you look $1 million, because you look good.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, Goody might say that the odd time, and then might blast one of my decisions or something like that. But I, you know what? I don't mind that. But I just don't put myself in that position to read it.
Yeah.
That can be frustrating and other things, you know, like, good example is one of the websites in Ireland that covers all the sports. I'm a big sports fan, of course. I am, you know, I've been involved in sports all my life. I can't even really go on that anymore. not because of the headlines, but because I might flick down. I flicked down. It wasn't even my match, and I was reading the bottom of the article, and so it was something like, at least it wasn't Frank Murphy this time. And I'm like, oh, that's going to be in my head for the week now, you know?
Yeah.
Because it does. Those things stick in your head.
Absolutely.
No matter who you are, they'll always affect you, I think. So I just remove myself from that and just leave people at it. Mm. And I get there's going to be, you know, that's our job. People are entitled to make comments on our decisions. It's a hard job. I'd like to see some of those guys do it who make the comments, but they're entitled to do that, so off with them.
Well, I don't think I can blow this whistle that you're talking about, this special whistle. I don't think I'll be able to blow it.
Yeah.
But even being in the stadium now, there has been a big shift in the interaction with the referee. So I went to a Scotland game and sat with the fans and my family, quite high up, couldn't see a thing. You've got to think I'm a self-proclaimed expert, understand the game, but I was struggling to see even who was who, like entry points into the breakdown. You're just watching at a much wider scale, and the people like these bloke fucking see, like shouting the C-bomb out, ref, you fucking like football, like aggressive, whereas in football it's much easier, you know, to pass judgment on different things. It's quite a simple sport, and I'm there, I'm like, mate, you ain't got a clue, like, you literally, I can't see what's going on, I don't know. And again, it's the easy, that's a societal thing, that's you know, there's been a shift in that in rugby. Absolutely.
I just don't know. I can't really remember when we were playing what it was like. Were fans like that with the referee or not?
No, they
you
weren't.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
I do know what, like if my wife brings my daughter to a game, she'll tell everybody around them.
Oh, really?
That might, just so you know, that this is the referee's daughter. Because she asked her. Because maybe you're talking the really bad scale, but even on, like, everybody's going to shout at the referee at some stage in the game. Everybody, even if it's just like offside ref, whatever. But so if my daughter comes, my wife tries to protect her. I think that's good. And it's, they lovely. Do. And I tell you something, they do. People, and they make such an effort when she tells them. And I think that's a really nice part of rugby, that people respect that.
Yeah, that's still there. Yeah. Like, absolutely. I think there's a tribalism in sport and society, and you, that kind of mob mentality. Like, I've been to football matches, I can see it.
Hmm.
And then they go off and they go back into the office as an accountant on Monday, and they're the different person, different alter ego. But that's... that's nice
that
she does that. I think it is important, because you want your family to be a part of your second career.
Well, exactly. And it's a weird thing, like, you know, coming to watch the referee. There's no winners, you know. You're only kind of coming for the occasion, and because I want them there, and they want to see me as well on the pitch. You know, it's nice to see your dad out on the pitch in a big game. But yeah, it's a weird one, bringing someone to watch a referee. What you say afterwards.
Well, this is what we're doing. We're trying to make it cooler. Like,
no,
as in,
no, it is kind of cool. Like, you know, I again, use my daughter's example. She gets a lot, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I saw your dad on TV last week. And, you know, which is great for her. It's nice. There's that side of it. But getting people into refereeing, I absolutely love it. Genuinely.
You can see you love it.
Yeah. So, like, I couldn't recommend more to get into it. And even at the lower scales. I mean, I think it's even... in some ways, it's nicer. I mean, one of our ex-pro referees, he retired from pro refereeing recently, and he went back and he stayed involved in All-Ireland League. And he goes to Ireland, he games down and refs them really well. Coaches love him because he's that high a standard. But what he does after every game is he has a few pints in the clubhouse. He gets someone to drive him, one of his friends or his wife, has two pints, has great fun with the guys, and then goes off home. He loves it, goes off every weekend. And he was a guy who probably... was a bit fed up with the pro game, particularly because COVID had come in and stuff, where everything got very sterile. So that side of refereeing, there's, you know, we're very lucky in our sport that there's such respect for the referee.
Mm.
And I think he's making advantage of that now, but back in the All-Ireland League. So,
what's the worst thing that's happened to you as a ref? So you've mentioned there, you go online and look at something, but that's there wherever if you go looking. But for you personally, has there been anything after a game? Has anyone recognised you? Or not? Has it been fairly decent?
Very little, Jim. Very little. So some coaches have had very emotional reactions after the game. But again, I understand that because it's emotional and it's directly after a game. And maybe you did, you know, mess the game up in some way. So I can go and understand that. But there's no big moment that I can think of that really upset me, which I think is great.
Yet.
But hopefully not.
Yeah.
I think it's something that we have to fight for. To kind of keep that respect to the referee. And, you know, kind of, when you said that about being up and stand and people, you know, cursing or whatever, and, you know, that's not nice to hear, because I'm not fully aware of that. You know, you get booed, and of course you do, big moments, like, that go on screen and stuff like that. But I wasn't aware that people were so kind of visceral towards us. But
I think it was the England-Scotland game. Yeah, so it's a bit different then, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
That was proper tribalism.
Yeah, okay.
It is. Who is the OG? Who's the best ref, if you can share that? Or like either now or that's retired, that you look up to? Like, so for me as a player, it could be, I don't know, Martin Johnson back in the day. Loved a bit of Rob Wainwright as well.
It's so funny because coming from a playing background, like I got kind of thrown into refereeing. So I never like, I talked to some guys and they're like, oh, remember that game and so-and-so refed. I was like, did he? You know what I mean?
No idea.
Yeah, not really sure. As you know, as you would be and stuff. But I suppose we're really lucky in Ireland that we have, and you probably know him well, he's probably refed a lot. Johnny Lacey is our high performance coach. And it's quite funny actually, because Johnny was my academy coach in Munster as well in terms of rugby, not refereeing. So it's kind of nice consistency again to have him coach me then and then into my refereeing career. But I kind of look up to him in a way because he was an ex-player. I kind of followed his path and he's done Munster and now he's coaching me. So he's kind of a real role model for me. I think refereeing is in a really good place at the moment. I think there's some really good referees out there. You know well that I work with Andy Brace a lot. I think he's probably the most consistent referee at the moment. Mm-hmm. I really like the way he referees. But I probably would say that because I work with him, work with him a lot and I enjoy working with him. But I think it shows on the pitch as well. But across the board, I think the standard of refereeing is in a good place. You know, the game's harder than ever to referee. There's these big, huge moments on the screen. We are going to be talking points. But I think in general, I think we get under the radar and we do our job pretty well.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Is it like when you play a dip in form and then how you get that back or not?
I was thinking about this the other day because I was thinking for a variety of different reasons, but I was thinking about how I'm performing at the moment. And you know, I was trying to assess my performances because I've had a bit of time off the way the Six Nations was selected and stuff like that. So I'm back out next week. And I think the one time I had a dip in form was probably, well, people will argue with this, you know what I mean? But in my own opinion, when I felt I wasn't refereeing as well as I could have was COVID. When that hit first, we kind of also changed a lot of things in the game. And you remember this. I mean, we brought in really strict high tackle process and people are come to terms with it now. They weren't at the time. But we also brought in stuff like in front of the kicker. People couldn't understand it at the time. You know, leading elbows, stuff people couldn't understand it, extra rolls.
I hate that one, the extra roll, just let it be.
But these were all brought in to make the game better. Whether you like it or not, that's what World Rugby were trying to do, to try to make the game faster, game better. I found it hard because I wasn't used to giving those penalties and we got a lot of flack for it. And what also happened is we ended up going from giving like 15 penalties a game to about 35, everybody. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
People were kicking off massively. And I found that so difficult. Because we didn't want it to, we were very reluctant to do it as well. But what I will say in hindsight, looking back at it, I think the game's better for it. I think our penalty counts are coming down. We're back to around mid-20s now. We were looking at some stats the other day. And certainly the example I use of people in front of kicks, that's opened the game up massively. More ball in play. So I can see it in hindsight, but that was a difficult time for me.
Yeah.
So my learning kind of from that was that when new things come in, I've got to adapt quicker. and just get on with the job, because it affected the way I performed the pitch. I was thinking, I don't want to give this, but then I give it. It's kind of, it doesn't look decisive then, and I want to be a decisive referee. Yeah. We all do.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is the thing. It's because there is so much going on a, yeah. a match, in a game of rugby, where, going back to how difficult it is, so many different laws, rules, yeah. interpretations, safety, you know, everything that goes on around the breakdown, the entry points, players off feet, high speed.
Yeah.
It is a really, really difficult game to not only consume if you're a casual fan, but with these constant adaptations in the laws, do you think that will settle or not? Do you think they'll evolve? I suppose it's a bit of both.
I think we've done a lot of the groundwork now during those COVID years. I don't think anything will change.
Going into the World Cup?
I don't think so. I think it's in a good place. I thought the quality of Six Nations was outstanding. Some of those games were just, I mean, that Ireland-France game was one of the best games I've ever seen.
Well, I saw Ireland, again, you might know this because you've just been with the coaches and stuff, but didn't they have the best disciplinary record in terms of yellows and reds? Am I right in saying or not?
I probably should know that, but I actually don't know that.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, of course. So it does cross over.
Well, of course, if you're a disciplined side, you're going to give away less penalties, give away less points.
Off the back of that as well was Scotland, right? So again, we were chatting, apparently Luke Pearce isn't happy with me, is he? Because I revealed to the world on Twitter that he apologised to Jamie Ritchie. It weren't in private, it was at the bar, for God's sake. Maybe that is a private sacred place.
And we just talked about it in private outside, so yes. Now you've brought it up in here.
Oh, well, gosh, it's a double whammy. I like Luke. You know, Luke was in there, and he's very open, modern, down with the times, apologetic when he needs to be, like he apologised to Jamie Ritchie.
Just stop.
He lost us that. No, we won that game, did we? No, we didn't. No. Was it the Ireland game? Yeah, it was the Ireland game, wasn't it?
He refereed that game. Right?
He did. He went, thank you, Frank. Yes.
He refereed that game. But again, get back to your point. What I like about Luke is he's so natural. Like, he just is himself, and it comes across on the pitch, and people just like that, don't they? Mm. Once you do your job well, like, you have to be accurate. You have to be in the right place at the right time, make the right decision based on the information. But then if you can kind of be yourself on top of that, I think it probably humanises you a bit.
Yeah. I think he's more down the humanising of the Essex route. He's throwing a bit of money at himself, isn't he? Like, fake tan.
I think it's not fully faked. I think it's tinted.
Is it moisturiser? Yeah, thank you for sharing, Frank.
I think he wasn't sure at the start, but then...
They've got these ones that don't streak, though. So I saw him after the game. I was like, mate, we are in, it's February, March, and you've got a tan. And I know you've been refereeing. I don't think you've been to Dubai. Yeah, so there we go. So Frank Murphy's just announced that Luke Pearce is tinted moisturiser.
Headline, yeah.
It is.
He wouldn't be the only referee, but anyway.
One thing he said... He was in the studio, was around his interaction with Billy Vunipola, where he marched Billy back a couple of times. I've referenced the Jamie Ritchie one, which he didn't want publicly aired, and I apologise for that. I won't do it again. But that interaction with players, and again, you've played the game. I'm 6'9" in heels. I was captain for Gloucester back in the day. Big men, intimidating, coming towards you. I know you, you might feel the intimidation, but this is the art of captaincy. I was listening to Sam Warburton. He studied Richie McCaw.
Yeah.
Off the back of the Jaco Piper incident in the Ireland-England game with the red card to Freddie Stewart, like how you manage that as a captain. And I've played with Owen. I see how he manages things. It's not great. Shouting, Bigger's the same. Johnny Sexton's the same. How important is that relationship with these captains, and like how much do you value that as a referee in that interaction?
I suppose... First of all, these guys, huge rugby IQ. They know what they're talking about. And when they come to you, we've got to be careful, because a lot of time, they're right.
Mm.
Do you know? But within that also, if someone's going to come to me in a game, it has to be at the right time. And it has to be in the right manner. Because if you come someone roaring, shouting, you're losing the battle already. Because this is just personally for me. I'm just not going to engage with the person, because I don't want to have an argument on the big screen with a big personality. Even if you are right, I think there's a way of doing things, and I really do think it's important for the image of the game that captains do things in the right way. And I think we're moving that way, and I really believe that. I suppose the other thing that we need to do as referees, we probably need to educate the teams in some things that they want checked. We just can't check. You know, the TMO cannot check everything in a game. There's certain protocols that we just can't go back and change our decision. And that might be a big decision. It shouldn't be, because protocols should allow us to check the big decisions, but it might be a big decision for a captain. But I think we've got to stick by them, because all we're going to do then is we're going to start slowing the game down. And we've worked so hard to speed the game up, particularly in the last year. I think we've got to keep moving forward towards that. You know, we work towards ideals, but we're going to make decisions that are wrong as referees. Mm. And teams are just going to have to adapt to it. But I think the best process from a captain's point of view is, when something happens and we explain that we can't change that, is find some downtime and come to us and say, well, this is what our issue was there. And then maybe something similar happens and we go, yeah, you're right. Or maybe you're not right, but maybe they make a good point, and then we can adapt to what they've said. But there's probably, you're not going to get much joy from shouting at a referee anymore.
Mm.
You know? Yeah, but it's not a good look for the game, is it?
Yeah, you can see that there has been a shift around that. And maybe it's the characters that are now captain or influential leaders within their team. You think about the greats gone by. Again, it's a bit old school, isn't it, going through the archives of the likes of Richie McCaw. Never heard him speak to referees or shout at referees. Even Martin Johnson, you know, he had this thing where he went down on his haunches, didn't he, to make himself smaller and more inconspicuous.
Possibly, yeah.
No, it's a really interesting, the psychology around that. And then also a couple of points and arguments that you could make. The human element of being a referee and making the decision on the fly, but you've got the TMO. But then the other argument could be, and this is one that I've thought about and sat on and wonder whether or not they could bring this in, as the man in the middle, or the woman, which is great to see.
Yeah,
there's been a shift in that space as well.
Oh, big time.
Big shout out to Holly Davison.
Yeah, we're lucky in the URC. We've got, you know, Joy Neville and Holly Davison.
Yeah, Joy Neville's doing a lot.
Probably the two most high-profile
women
doing it, and doing it really well.
So. Yeah. Well, I've heard Joy in the TMO box a lot recently.
Oh, well, it's a serious achievement for her to be officiating in the Six Nations.
And
it's a credit to her, because she's really good.
Big shout out. Big shout out to the two lovely ladies in the middle. But with the TMO, so the two arguments can be the guy in the middle or the woman in the middle making the decision with a little bit of input from the TMO. The other argument could be is the person in the middle can stick to that and not have to worry about the burden of these big calls. And just let remember, we're living our life through the phones now.
Yes.
AI is coming. AI is coming down the road, and potentially we're going to implant it into ourselves. So why not have a TMO make them big decisions? They've got access to all the cameras, and just say to you, I love the interaction, by the way, when the referees, you know, you go to the big screen and there's this interaction. I love that. And I think it's important for the game that the fans, even more so, have more interaction, hear what's going on. But there could be an argument that says the TMO is arguably the most important person, because they've got access to everything, and they can take the drama and the hysteria and the emotion away from you as a referee getting absolutely hounded. Good argument?
Not a bad argument, but, you know, there's probably an inequality of facilities across different competitions.
Mm.
I don't think it's fair to be able to do that in one competition, not another. Maybe you could do it at World Rugby on the big stage, you know, in the big stadiums, but certainly when we're back in URC or Champions Cup, we're not going to have facilities to do that at every game. What I like about what we do now is you have a clear leader of the process, and that's us as referees on the pitch if we're in the middle, and the TMO is just there to facilitate the situation. But I think that on the whole, Jim, I think that works pretty well. I think it's in a good place. There's certain trials going on in Super Rugby at the moment, so we'll see how they go, where the TMO kind of is doing that. So they'll refer a yellow card they'll put a yellow card, watch two replays, make a decision. If they think it's yellow red, they'll just give it to the TMO and he'll come back with a decision 8 minutes later. So let's see how that goes, because that's not far off what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting to see how it pans out. But at the moment, you'd be surprised, particularly in the domestic competitions, how not poor the facilities are, but they're not the high-end facilities you think they are.
Yeah,
you know, there's somebody watching a screen in a room upstairs in a stadium with 7 second delay, and that's it.
Yeah, well, I can't
tell
the
URC.
Yeah, exactly. You know? But there is a big gulf between club competition and internationals, and the jeopardy's higher.
Yeah, that's true.
And all these, and I think the other argument could be, and one thing that I've put into the mix, and we're talking about at World Rugby Studios, which is the creative arm that I'm working for, is more interaction. So hear me out. Like, I think this would be quite cool. And, you know, you had the captain's call. I really enjoyed that.
I did too, actually.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But as in, you have a real interactive part of that. So maybe it's two, maybe it's three, maybe it's one in a game. So the big call, and then the game stops. You can like to put on some lovely Red Bull. Red Bull's a good brand. Headphones on, microphone, like NFL style microphone comes up on the big screen. Everyone knows what's going on, right? You're being challenged on this call, and there's a kind of collective decision to be made with the captain around. So I just think this is very American style.
I was going to say it's very NFL,
but it works in terms of engaging with the crowd who have got no idea what's going on.
I can see your point, but I mean, we did it. We trialed the captain's challenge in a competition called the Rainbow Cup, which kind of preceded URC. It was called kind of COVID period again. But the interesting thing I got from that is the captains didn't like it in the end. It wasn't us. We didn't mind. In fact, it turned out pretty good for us because remember we were just talking about the captains challenging us. So when they come to us saying, would you like to challenge? And they kind of, then they were a bit, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
they go, oh, go on. So I'll put a challenge. And it would look ridiculous, some of the stuff that they'd put up there. So
it was one a game, was it?
You had won a game. This was the beauty of it. If you got it right, you kept it. And if you got it wrong, it was gone.
I love that.
So like there was that kind of jeopardy that the captains had. And that's why you didn't like it in the end. Because
they are 50-50s, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And I what a captain would do to me, maybe for a try situation, he'd say, oh, we want to check that try, Frank. And I said, okay, but for on-field, it was a try for me. Yeah, but we need to check it. Okay, let's check it. And then we'd have no footage to prove my decision wrong. Okay, well, challenge overturned. You've lost your challenge. Off we go.
Do you say anything? I'd be like that. Booyah! I'd say something, but you're all mic'd up now, so you can't say anything. And you are fucking
good. Yeah, there was that element of it. We were probably getting protective about our own decisions, but my feeling, and from talking to the players, they didn't like it in the end.
Mm. It's more interactive, though. That's part of it. I think these big decisions, they need to find a way. Again, I get that there's a safety element to some of the big ones, but making it more digestible for the casual fan to be like, right, what is going on here? That's why I hate the double roll. That's the one for me. The double roll absolutely breaks me. I'm like, come on, you talk about trying to speed up the game. That is speeding up the game. It's a double roll, bang, ball's gone, it's away. And you're pinging it and, you know, someone might pick a scrum and then you've got four minutes of your life's gone. No turnover. Yeah, no turnover. Well, that's the bit where most people get injured in there. So that's a good thing.
No, like, you want to transition. Transitions cause chaos.
Yeah, I do like chaos.
Yeah.
I do. But I just think them ones that it's like you want to speed the game up, yeah, you're slowing it down in them instances.
Listen, like when someone makes a line break, Jim, and it's an extra roll, sometimes we get that wrong because we're so, you know, indoctrined to give that. But generally our checkpoint for that is, have they moved on the ground to prevent a jackal taking place? We're trying to get away from giving the ones on line breaks where the kind of momentum takes them further and stuff like that. But I can see your frustration.
What about the feed?
What about the feed?
Frank, come on. That ball is going basically straight into the number 8's feet.
The number 9 is allowed to align himself to his side of the scrum with his shoulder on the centre line. He can put the ball in straight from there, which may look crooked sometimes.
It may do. You know, as a scrum half, that ball is being blasted into the back because they want the ball in and out.
I suppose you have to hook. I mean, if you don't hook, you're sanctioned.
Mm.
So that's helped a small bit.
Any other ones that you would understand why people would be like, what is going on here? I'm going to throw another one that needs to change. I loved it as a player. The maul going forward. So, you know, you swim up the side of the maul and all these things. And again, it's a part of the game which a casual fan don't really know what's going on. It's the dark arts of the game. And then it ends up in a bit of a melee. The maul's gone forward like a metre, maybe 2 metres, maybe even 5 metres, 10 metres it's gone forward. And it ends up on the floor. And then, bang, whistle goes. Explanation around what's happened. Bang, scrum to the opposition team for swimming up the side of a maul, but not changing their binds. That's just my opinion. Again, not something you need to answer.
That's something that we talk about a lot.
Mm.
Of course it is. The line out is, when you talked about the scrum earlier, but the line out maul is the most difficult area for us to
officiate.
There's so much going on. And when you think about it, there's only, say I'm the referee, I only have an assistant as far as, there's only two of us looking, and the amount of stuff we have to look at to make sure we're accurate in that area is, there's a lot more than people realise. But in the conversations we're having, we really want to get back to the maul being a pushing contest. So what we don't want to see is, okay, yeah, people fully bound can, you know, worked her way to through, certainly through them all. That's brilliant. I love seeing, you know, some of the second rows are brilliant at getting through those seams and getting to the far side, the back end of the mall. But when you're on the side, really what we want to see is we want to, people to stay bound. And what we don't like to see is people at the back kind of attempting to pull people out, because they're not bound in, you know, they're not fully bound on the arm. So that's something that we're looking at the moment. And I think I agree with you. It's something we need to clean up.
Yeah, they need to get rid of that. I don't know who they is. Well, are they my bosses?
Your bosses, yeah, yeah. You're on it, Jim. You're on it.
And the Caterpillar Rock as well. Goodness me. That's just got longer and longer now. It started off long at Saracens. It started off long, then it got shorter.
You probably initiated it, did you? You must have been there with Saracens.
Do you know why I initiated it? Humbly, I was charging people down to the cow sheds and back. So they were like, we need to make this rook longer. Saris need to make it longer. Yeah. That was my super strength. It was mauling and charge downs.
Charge downs.
And a bit of cattle rocking as well. Perhaps, yeah. But that's another thing, a bit of frustration. I mean, because it's the 5 seconds, isn't it? I suppose it's the empathy that you need. Mm. How funny, was it Joe Marler was counting down? 1, 2, 3, come on, ref. Like these lads just shouting, the gobby ones, I can see you shaking your head.
Oh, it's just when you're there trying to control the offside line and they're 5, 4, it's, you know, it's, there's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on.
You know, maybe they could use their time better. I'm not sure, but I can see their frustration. Yeah. I think in fairness to the players, they've made that, they've started to clean that up themselves and making sure that we have players bound so that they are shorter. You know, these long binds again that we're talking about in the mall. You've seen a bit of that in the URC where people have come around and picked the ball up and scored tries. And in Europe, I think it happened with some of the South African teams. So I think in fairness to them, they put pressure on us to put the user call in there and also to make sure people are fully bound, which helps a bit. Mm. Helps a bit, but again, maybe it's something that we need to tidy up.
Take me through a working week. I'll start with a Monday. Monday's apology day, right? Is that when the emails go in and it's like, we're sorry that this happened?
Which way?
Either way. Take me through a working week of, let's go a test match. And maybe we can start with there and then go through the amount of work that gets put in. So a test match has already been played, not week one. Let's go week two. So a game's already happened. People are raging at the referees. What's the interaction like? Do the referees send in clips? Vice versa, the coaches sending clips?
Well, first of all, obviously with a test match, you're going to be dealing with a referee and probably two assistants and a TMO, possibly from, you know, 4 different unions. So you're unless you're moving on to a test match the following week, you're probably not going to be all together in the same room, or unless you get to debrief the next day if everybody's late flights, which is the ideal, which is what we want to do. But it doesn't always transpire like that. So say in my case, what I would do is I'd watch the game probably on the Sunday if the game was on the Saturday. I'd review it, big moments, you know, not really detailed, but I'd go through the big moments. And then my coach will have sent me his thoughts on the game, which would be really, really detailed. And I'll probably cross-reference between what I've seen and what my coach's done. And myself and my coach will sit down 9 o'clock Monday morning and we'll go through the game for about 2 hours with both our notes in front of us. And that's essentially, that's the real review done. After that, then I'll contact my team. They'll have sent me their notes. This is assuming I'm the referee. They'll have sent me their notes. Again, I'll put them into cross-reference them against what we've done that morning, and I'll speak to all of them on that afternoon. And then what we have to do for test matches is we have to write up our review. So what World Rugby like to do is they have a triptych, which is speed, which is about the breakdown, space, which is about offsides, and safety, which is about foul play. So they're the three main areas, and then you add on the two set pieces, line out, maul, and scrum. So you write up a review of each, there's a platform we can do this at, which everybody can see who's involved in the referees and the officials. So we write up a review, which is very detailed timelines. And then probably there's 4 selectors. So we'll have that review as such with them in terms of our performance. So how our performance is rated. So we'll do that on the Tuesday morning, maybe anytime after Monday. Could be Tuesday morning, could be Tuesday, but we like to get it done before Wednesday. And so we'll come to agreements on different clips and essentially they'll rate your performance. And we'll do that as a team on Zoom, which is one of the good things that's came out of COVID, that we kind of do these things together on Zoom. And that can be intense, you know, if the game didn't go well, it's It's hard to sit in that room and kind of be told that you didn't ref well. But that's part of it. And, you know, we've got to learn from that. And maybe your job for the next game, or maybe you ref really well. And it's, you know, it's a nice experience.
On the rating, so is it out of 10? Like, how is it just old school? Out of 10? Or good, bad,
indifferent? What they do initially is they'll go through all your penalties and they'll give you, you know, right or wrong. And then they'll do a list of non-decisions, things that we didn't pick up in the game. So that kind of goes into a matrix where you can see your percentage of accuracy. So that kind of forms a part of it.
What's a good percentage, just for the listeners?
I think in World Rugby, you'd want to be over 90%.
Really? Accuracy, okay, so it's high.
No, it is high. Yeah, we would hold ourselves to quite high standards. And even that, you'd be disappointed, very disappointed if you're below 90. And you'd have that then, you know, in scrums and lineouts as well. And then... essentially, the reviewer will write up your performance in the box and everybody will see how you got on. They don't really do it out of 10. They'll just say whether it was a good performance, an average performance, poor performance. And, you know, it's...
Every week.
That's the high end of World Rugby, but as it filters through the competition, it's very similar. Very similar. And then, in fairness, what we do really well is we meet on a group, obviously through Zoom, all the World Rugby referees at a time that suits everybody in both hemispheres. And... they review each game that, say, for the Six Nations, they review three games on the Wednesday and they go through all the big moments and make sure that we're all aligned on the same page. So it's an intensive few days.
And that Monday is
very intensive. Yeah. You like, because you're so drained from the game anyway, and you get to the stage by Tuesday where you've watched the game three or four times and you've had comments from the outside, there's big decisions, kind of everybody's asking you about it. So,
and the coach is coming at that point, because I know there is that
the coaches, we're slightly removed from the coaches after the match. So they'll send stuff to the selectors, and then if the selectors think it's relevant, they'll pass it on to us. Which they do most of the time, because in fairness to coaches, they're very good at picking out stuff that's important and pertinent to the performance. And then we're asked to respond in kind.
You have to respond, because Kieran Crowley mentioned that during the Six Nations there was an apology. Would that have been directly from a ref, or is that from the assessor, or is that from World Rugby?
Generally, I'm not sure what you're talking about there, but very, very little there'd be apologies. Well, what it would be...
Yes, you're right.
The coach would send something and... it would be clear that we're wrong, and we just got to go, yeah, you're right, we're wrong. There's not much else you can say. But then he might send a clip that's 50-50 and you say, oh, well, this is why I went this way instead of that way. And they might come back and say, yeah, I understand that. But I suppose I understand the frustration from a coach when he gets a message back saying, yeah, we're wrong, but there's not much else you can do. But they have to understand that we feel the repercussions of that through our selection.
Necessary from them, but exhausting, I imagine. When
exhausting, but it's not always exhausting. You know, we don't ref bad every week.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's Monday. You've done no training.
No, that's Monday and Tuesday. I train on a Tuesday afternoon. Really lucky with our employers and the IRFU. They have S&C guys in place for all of us. So I've a program I follow with him on a Tuesday, which would be, you know, weights, prehab.
Weights,
I know.
Leg weights.
But the thing for that, for me, particularly, you know, I'm 39 now, is injury prevention. You know, you don't want to get on the pitch and get injured. It's embarrassing as a referee to get injured.
You very rarely see it now as well.
You very rarely see it, but we put a lot of work in the background, and then you do a running session on that day, probably conditioning, and then Thursday you do a gym session and you probably do a speed session. Obviously, the conditioning and speed are much more relevant to the game.
What kind of stuff, just specifically? So on a Tuesday, you'll run in the afternoon?
Yeah.
How far?
Well, it'll be like a conditioning session. So, you know, it'll be tempo runs, or, you know, like something akin to interval running. Like, you know, we test ourselves on the Bronco test, same as the players. So we'd have to train for that. But it's probably a good test to use to get you in shape for a game. It's kind of relevant in terms of the turning and the distance you run. So the referees are pretty fit at the moment.
They look good as well. Yeah, they do. They're in some good shape. Like, I saw Luke after the Ireland game, even Jaco Pieper looked good, Nick Berry.
Yeah, well, Nick's one of the Adonises, but yeah.
Is he? Well, I don't know why he looks that way.
He's in shape. But
he's got tinted moisturiser, definitely.
I'm not sure.
No?
I'm not sure. He's living down in Australia.
Oh, he is, yeah.
We're tested, like, so we have to stay fit. You know, it's part of the selection. It's actually part of, it's a selection tool. So 10% of our selection is based on how well conditioned we are. And we've hit certain targets. There's World Rugby. I've employed a S&C coach from Ireland called Carl Gilligan, who runs all that and runs it really well. So, you know, we're held to account in terms of our fitness levels. I think we should be. We're refereeing a professional game. We should look the part. We should be able to keep up with play.
Well, I listen to the ref mic now because I love rugby.
Yeah.
I love that interaction, especially when you're in the stadium.
Yeah.
Because, as again, for my job, but it also gives you much more depth to the game, and you can hear the referees who are out of breath, and there's not many of them. And I'm watching it. I'm like, fair play.
Yeah.
You know, not only do they look good, a lot better now, and tighter tops and
Ola.
And all that stuff and bigger arms, but the conditioning side of things, you can hear that. Okay, right, so we get... So is Wednesday... Did you get a day off or not?
Day off. We try to take Wednesday off.
Okay, so Wednesday's off. Thursday...
Thursday, you're kind of... You're into prepping for the weekend. You'll already... You will definitely have received clips from the coaches you're refereeing that weekend, whether it's international or domestic or...
About the opposition. Look at this.
It can be a bit of both. It can be a bit of both. I think if they send clips about the opposition to us, they're then sent on to the opposition, which I think is right.
Of course. What kind of things could they be? Would they be like scrum? Would they be like offside, charge downs?
Yeah.
Okay, everything.
In fairness, they try to pick up trends that are relevant. They're not trying to... They're just trying to pick up things that will help them that they don't think is fair that the other team are doing.
Mm.
And teams are always going to try things. So it kind of helps us. It helps our prep because we're like, oh, yeah, we know they do that, but that reaffirms it. And we'll talk to the other team and say, you can't quite do that. And everybody understands the process. Sometimes it's a bit tit for that. They just send in things for the sake of it. I find that sometimes they don't. Coaches kind of forget that we do a lot of previewing for the games ourselves, but I get it as well because they're only covering their own backs. They want to make sure that they have all angles covered, and you know, some of the coaches are just workaholics. So I don't think it's not that you don't trust us; they just want to cover every angle. But yeah, we'll get that on a Thursday, and we'll have to get together with our team probably on a Thursday, whether it's locally or through Zoom, and just go through a few key points that we want to do well that week. And then Friday is usually a travel day,
haircut day.
Possibly. But that'd have to be booked in.
Yeah.
So depends if it's a big game or not. And then we travel and you probably have a meeting that Friday, but very, you know, the work is done on the Thursday with your team, and it really helps. And it's probably something, I'm trying to the right word for it, but in the URC, we don't have the same structures in other leagues. We have to travel a lot. We don't use the same ARs every week. You know, it's a brilliant, brilliant competition because there's five countries, but that means that we have to travel and work with people sometimes who don't speak the same language as us. So that can be, that's kind of a challenge for us at our own kind of domestic level. But usually we'll have to put a bit more work in if that's the case and make more of an effort, call people individually and try set up how you want the game to be run and what roles you want your assistants to be doing. But that's part of it.
Proper job then, is it?
It's full on.
Yeah.
It's full on.
Yeah.
It really is. It keeps you going. This Six Nations has been kind of funny because they've selected the 15 referees for 15 games with a view to appointing to the World Cup. But what it's meant is that very few people have been out every weekend, even assistant referees. There's only a handful of assistant referees who've even been out twice. So I happened to be assistant referee in the first round. Had nothing since. So I haven't known myself. I've had 4 weeks off and I'm like, what's going on?
How was your assessment of that one? Was it all right? How was...
I didn't ref it, but Andy ref very well.
Do you not get assessed as the touchy?
You get as a team.
As a team. Yeah. Okay.
No, but you do individually as an ARA. Your name is up there if you make an error. You know, the referee doesn't have to take responsibility for that, which would be harsh.
Yeah, see, it's brutal when you put it like that, and some people be like, well, yeah, that's how it should be. But this Six Nations is an interesting one, is it? Because you've just said it there. Mm. There's like an assessment process going into the World Cup. So if you've made a big call, it'd be interesting to see if Yakko goes. I don't, that's a different call, isn't it? Because it's such a big call for player safety. We've gone through that. But when will you find out? Like, when do people know whether they're going in? Will that be based on the assessments and grading and how they've done in the Six Nations?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, for me, I found out that I wouldn't be going as a referee before the Six Nations. Mm. So I got down to the last, what do they have now, the 15? I got down to the last 17. Two of us were cut before the Six Nations. And in the right way, the selectors rang us and gave us their reasons. You know, they didn't shy away from it. You know, they were very open and honest. I was really, like, I was disappointed.
Mm.
Like, I thought I did enough to get a game of the Six Nations, but... It's like anything, Jim. Like, we've done it so much in the past as players. Like, I probably very proud of the way I conducted myself up to that point, because I think I did enough to get selected, but I fell out on the subjectiveness of, you know, the way they select is they've got like some sort of pie chart where it's like 10% fitness, 10% law knowledge, something like 40% performance in the games, and then they give themselves about 30% subjective. And I get that, because they're selectors, they want to bring the people they trust. And in my case, unfortunately, I probably didn't have enough games under my belt. I had done 2 internationals leading into it, and they just thought, you've done well, but have we seen enough of you? That's disappointing, because I know I've done well, but that was their decision. So I'm kind of through that side of it now. I'm kind of trying to push myself to get as an AR. And obviously, like, the big goal for me after that is to give it another 4 years and go next World Cup based on performance. But, you know, it's a tense time for the lads, the 15 lads who've just refereed, because they're waiting to find out if they're going or not.
Bit of drama. Like I said, I like a bit of drama.
But that's good, isn't it? It drives competition. It drives competition within the group, and it'll make us better referees. So.
Again, all these buzzwords we've used, like jeopardy for everyone involved, not just players, teams, but also referees.
I'm not sure many people would know that, you know, that it's that rigorous. You know, it's
I didn't know it was that rigorous. I thought it was just a case of they were just looking at different referees to go to the World Cup and different combinations.
It'll go up to 15 to 12, but maybe those 3 people who are dropped will go as assistants. We just don't know. It's that time of year. It's exciting in one way, but it's nerve-wracking in another.
Yeah, I imagine. Do you think this goes into the mix as well around the language stuff? And this has become quite topical. And again, we've played, so we know the different cultures and the way you interact and the empathy and tense and tone and how you speak. We have obviously moved on in the world, and a big part of what is happening now in the club game in Europe is the French language, the referees trying to speak French. I don't know if anyone's doing it in Italian yet, for example.
A few of the URC guys. I think Mikey's done it, Andy Brace has done it.
Okay.
In fairness to them.
Love that. On top of all this as well, like fair play. Yeah. But I just find that is probably the next biggest must-have evolution. It's not easy just to speak a foreign language and everything that goes with it. But I feel a little bit when I watch Italy, and luckily Michele Lamaro can speak a little bit of broken English, but that, you know, that kind of rapport must be difficult. And at where we are now with them small margins of, like, you know what I'm talking about, like, how much pressure is on there? Is it a given that you need to speak French, Italian, or is this just taken upon yourself?
No, it's not a given. What is a given is that English is the language of world rugby, and people understand that. The teams understand that. But I think there's a huge benefit to the referees who can speak a small bit of the language. I don't do it. It's something I'd like to try to do, but I'm also really aware that I've got quite a strong accent, a Cork accent. And I put a lot of effort into just being very clear and concise in what I'm saying, because I particularly at the start of my career, and this has happened to some referees, I was probably hard to understand, and maybe I still am, but I make a big effort to be really clear in what I'm saying and deliberate in what I'm saying. So probably the next step for me then is to start probably, you know, throwing in a bit of different languages. But it's tough. I mean, the lads are going to a World Cup where there's going to be a lot of language spoken. I mean, you know, you're going to have Spanish, you're going to have Italian, you're going to have Japanese. There's going to be different languages. Are you expected, if you do Japan versus Italy, to speak both? That's the counter argument. You probably have to speak. Have to speak English, don't you?
You'd look cool if you could speak both, though, wouldn't you? How cool?
It would be
look?
Pretty cool. Yeah,
yeah, it would.
Yeah, well, it would. Of course, it would.
Hey, referees coming through. That's what you need. If you can speak multilingual Japanese, Spanish, Italian. Basically, be like Sergio Parise, because he can speak a lot of languages.
Well, there you go. But I agree. I mean. I've spoken to players about it, and I know the Italian guys and the French guys really appreciate when people make an effort. So I think it's something that I want to upskill on personally, but step by step.
Rugby as a whole, having been on both sides as a player and a referee, is going through a tough time at the minute. I think it's as safe as it's ever been with everything that's put in place for us as ex-players. But just as important, the players coming through. Now, you're in the middle of that. Are you feeling that? Are you seeing it? Do you feel it's the safest it's ever been?
Oh, sorry, you're just talking safety?
Safety and as a product. I think both of them. You are there on the front line. You're watching these collisions. You're seeing them, but you're also seeing the athleticism and the power of some of these
guys. There's no doubt the players are just so powerful and so big now. I cannot imagine Like, you know when we used to go out on Tuesdays in Leicester, I just can't imagine doing that session anymore.
Bone on bone.
Like, and we had big guys. We had Henry and Alessandro too. You know, we had those huge guys run into us, and I was like, in fact, I don't even think they were allowed to do it. They were too big, weren't they?
The two Langies weren't. Yeah. They, if we had a bad day in defence, they'd get rolled out. Henry would get rolled out for some one-on-one. His son's playing for the under-20s. Have you seen that?
No. Oh, no, yeah. I have, yeah.
Yeah, under-20s, 6'9", 20 stone. Goodness me, your man.
Well, we'll get back to your question in a minute, but I remember in those Tuesday sessions, at one stage, probably, you know, my closest friend at the time would have been Ian Humphreys. We would have played 9 and 10 quite a lot together. He was playing really well. And you know, Goody was probably getting shitty for not getting picked, and Ian was getting picked. So Goody got back in the team or whatever. And Cockers was the coach at the time. And Cockers said to Ian, "We're not picking you because of your defence. But what we'll do is after every Tuesday session, I'm going to run at you 10 times. And if you tackle me 10 times, I'll pick you at the weekend." What? Do you know what I mean? Only in Leicester.
Oh, he's so old school, Cockers.
It happened, and sometimes Ian's got picked and sometimes he didn't.
Oh, it was so old school. I remember doing one-on-ones with Deeks, who's now coaching Leicester.
Yeah.
Phil Larder's defence coach. He's got a 10-metre run-up at me, and it was low body chop. And my shoulders were, they were my Achilles heel, and my shoulders, and it just made them worse. I was like, what is this? Yeah. I remember, yeah, they used to roll out Henry as well for one-on-ones.
But it's a good point, isn't it? Because I think the game is safer than it ever has been in terms of how we protect the players and make sure that player welfare and all. Because, you know, back then we probably weren't as educated as we are now.
That's the thing, it's the education. Yeah. Like, I don't look at it any other way in the fact that we weren't educated. As I got towards the end of my career...
I think we were trying to be, but we just hadn't evolved into where we are now.
Exactly. Well, you look at everything. And we're probably nowhere near where we can be in terms of technology, support staff, S&C. I'm talking about if you look at NFL, NBA, you know, the ice hockey, soccer. Like, there's huge growth, but where we've come, it's not even... I mean, I retired 5 years ago, and what I was doing to get on the pitch and putting myself through in training is not even comparable to what is happening now. But it's a great sport, and we're still in it. And it's going through a tough time, but everything that it brings, the different people, the fact that we're here, look at us.
I feel lucky to be part of it, genuinely. Mm. And it's just, I travel a hell of a lot. That's probably one of the hard sides of being a referee, is being away, but it's also one of the great things. And I remember when we were playing, you're probably a bit like me now, but when we were playing, we travel a lot. But we were stuck to regimes and we had to be somewhere at a certain time. It's great as a referee. You're kind of in control of the way you want to set up your travel and your time when you're away. But what I really like is wherever we go, I'll always meet someone I've played with or refereed. Or like I said earlier, when we just got started talking, I love how small rugby is. And this is what I was saying when we just walked in earlier, just reminded me, is the last time I met you and we actually had a chat... Because we've met in dispatches at grounds and stuff like that. You're always busy, don't have much time for me. And
you're serious. No, I can see. You don't want banter. It's like you want to be your Frank Murphy, the ref, not the Frankie boy that I know.
Maybe, but anyway, you kind of go off with the big dogs anyway. But the last time I met you and we had a chat, you were getting on a plane to Cork. And I sat down in a seat, I had my headphones on, sat down next to me, and I don't think you noticed me. And I said, "Jim." He goes, "Frank, how's it going?" He said, "What are you listening to?" I said, "I'm listening to you and Goody on the podcast." He said, "No,
mental."
You know what I mean? It was meant. I couldn't believe it. You sat down next to me, and you just started the podcast back when it was good.
Back when it was real and authentic. I can't believe where it's gone.
No, it's fairly.
You know, we're sat
fantastic.
Here. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what? We did it for the right reasons. Like I've mentioned about it before, and this role that I'm in now, I've got a real passion. And listening to you, people wouldn't have heard you.
No.
Chat. They don't know Frank. Not that they need to, but I think putting
the
person...
You don't need
to.
To be honest, I wouldn't do this, but I know you, so you asked me to do it, and I was really happy to do it, but it wouldn't be something I'd go looking to do. But I think what you're doing for the game, I think it's great.
Thank you, Frank.
It's enjoyable to listen to on the road anyway.
Exactly, and that's part of it. So part of growing the game, but also listen to the characters, and also, mate, the amount of work that goes in. Like, I am interested in this space, and also the amount of input that it takes to make a game go ahead at the weekend. Like, isn't just about it is about the players and the coaches and the people paying, but I think people will be really interested to hear what goes in, from learning to blow a whistle at the start.
The basics at the start. Yeah. Mm. It's mad when you think about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe we'll get you out there sometime.
Oh, I don't know. I'm good in straight lines when I'm running.
Do you know who I heard was getting into it, genuinely, before he moved to Saracens?
Hit me.
Your nemesis. Big Scottish second row.
Swinner.
There's lots of talk about him getting into it at one stage.
Tim Swinner?
Yeah. I think he did a bit in Scotland.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, a bit tall, isn't he?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
A bit too big. Yeah. I thought you were going to say George Cruz then. Be hilarious watching him do it.
I don't know George too well, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see some more players.
I think we have to. I think it's great for the game.
So you've seen it with coaches, young coaches, that have played the modern game. Andy Farrell, 10 years out. Steve Borthwick. I know Scott Robinson's slightly older. He's just been appointed as the All Blacks coach. Mm. Gregor Townsend, maybe a little bit longer out of there. But you know what I mean? As in people that understand what it is, and there's no people.
Or Gary even.
Of course.
Marcella, well, he's doing so. It's, it just shows that they're able to bring that IQ into their coaching roles. But
it's important.
Yeah, no, very much so.
Well, Frank Murphy, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for sharing that. And I've got my fingers and toes crossed that you'll be the robot AI. What do you call it? Assistant for the World Cup. What do you call it?
Assistant referee.
Assistant referee.
Well, I'm hoping to get there.
I'm calling it IA. AA?
We'll keep the head down and see what happens.
Yeah, what do you call it?
AR.
Yes. I keep saying AI. Yeah. What's AI? That's robots, right?
Yeah, artificial Same intelligence. Thing. Assistant referee.
Same thing.
That's what it's going to end up being anyway, isn't it?
I know. Frank, we'll do it again in 5 years and you wouldn't have aged as well. You look $1 million.
Thank you, Jim. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.